Hi, good morning. Thank you very much. Today, the topic I will discuss is vector diffusion map connection applications and their application. Oh, it doesn't work. What's wrong? Okay, so let's start. I will start from motivative example, in particular, the cryo-electron microscopy, or AKA cryo-EM problem. And then we will discuss how to play with this kind of data. And then, in the end, I will show you some theoretical results showing that how this algorithm works. And then we will have some numerical results and other applications. So this is the first example. The question is in the following, like how to determine a 3D macromolecule structure for large molecules. For example, you want to understand how your ribosome looks like inside your cell. It is about 20 or 40 nanometer in size. Not very large, but not too small. So there is a hope. Previously, people use X-ray crystallography method. For example, they can really take the image of potassium channel protein and ribosome. And the people who worked on this won several Nobel Prize. However, this method doesn't work very well for most of the proteins. The main problem is most proteins have so far withstood all attempts to crystallize them. It means that we cannot get a crystallization, and so that we cannot use the X-ray or so on technique to do it. So in about 1980, there's another method proposed. It's called cryo-electron microscopy method. How does it work? Somehow you can view it as a radon transform approach. What does it mean? For example, you have a molecule. There's a Mickey Mouse molecule. And you just use the electron source to go through it, and you get a projection. So it's a tomographic projection. And you get several different images. So now, what is the challenging point of it? Maybe you may say, okay, well, this is a well-studied problem. You know, this is radon transform. So you get all the images. What's the problem? You can use inverse radon transform. So maybe this is a numerical issue or so what? Okay, so this is a correct viewpoint. Suppose the macromolecule can, as a human being, to follow our order. For example, I ask this molecule to, hey, you turn right, then you turn forward, then you turn back. I want to take a picture. So just do it. Then the molecule do it. Okay, perfect. Problem solved. But unfortunately, the protein cannot rotate as you wish. Second, this process, because the electron beam is of high energy, so the process of taking images is destructive. So the projection directions cannot be known. What do I mean? You have one molecule, and you can only take one projection. And a priori, you don't know how the molecule is located. How can you know its projection direction? So you get one, two, three, whatever, n projections, but you don't know the projection of any of them. Second, the other limitation is all the images are very, very noisy. This is a physical limitation because of some electron dose issue. So in the end, we will get a big database containing many, many different projection projection images. But they are very noisy, and you don't know their projection directions. Now the problem is, suppose there is a way, or maybe some oracle tell you, okay, the Euler direction or Euler angle of projection image one is what, and the other one and everything, every project, you know all the projection directions of all the images, then you can just run inverse Radon transform, and then you can enjoy low flash number and so on, and you get somehow okay images back. But so this is our ultimate goal, how to determine the projection direction. Suppose we can determine the projection direction of each image, then we are able to use inverse Radon transform to reconstruct the image itself. The problem is how to determine it. This is real data. This is E. coli, 50S Riverson subunit. If I don't tell you there is something inside, probably you will say this is noise. Yeah, it's very noisy, but if you pay attention, I really want this work. I have no idea what's wrong. Yeah, but it worked before, 10 minutes ago. You see, there's really something, right? So before determining the projection directions, it seems that we have to deal with one more problem. Noise is too, the images are too noisy. So we have to increase the signal to noise ratio. And the common eye algorithm is the algorithm used to determine the projection direction. And class averaging algorithm is the algorithm used to increase the noise signal to noise ratio. In this talk, we will focus on class averaging algorithm, telling you how to increase the SNR so that you can apply common eye algorithm to get the final estimation of the projections, directions of all the images. Then you can reconstruct the images. Before that, we have to make one assumption. All the imaged molecules are the same and there's no symmetry. It's not a very practical assumption, but we have to live with it. So what is class averaging algorithm? You want to group images all have similar viewing directions. For what? Suppose this is a clean image without any noise, and you get two rotations, in-plane rotations of this image, and then you add noise. Then, if you can determine how these two images are rotated, then you can rotate PJ 90 degrees up, and then do the averaging. Then low flash number tells you, okay, good, you will get some convergence in the noise, but your image information, the deterministic information, will be preserved. So this is our ultimate goal. So now the problem is reduced to the following. I want to find images. We want to group the images into subgroups so that so that all the images in one subgroup have the same projection direction or very close projection direction. So, is the motivation clear? Okay, so now the problem is the following. I give you a set of data, a set of images, and I want to determine a subgroup. I want to group them. And what does it mean by group? I want to find somehow affinity or metric to measure how close two images are so that we can determine which image is closer to which, and then we can do the grouping. So we need to define kind of affinity in between images. Once we can do the definition, then we can use this affinity to determine subgroups. Okay. How to do it? affinity graph. It's a weighted graph denoted by V and E. V is the data, E is affinity. So you have several data points. You can view I, J, they are all each is an image, and you can find a way to determine how close they are, called WIJ. And you can even maybe have some other information. For example, you have three images. By your eyes, this is Z, right? This is Z, too, right? Nobody will say, oh, maybe this is N, whatever. But they are close. And this is U. It is N from this direction. And you can see that this Z, if you simply use L2 norm, I1 minus I2, and you take L2 norm, you'll find that they are very different. But however, by your eyes, they are close. In what sense? In the sense that you rotate this guy to match him, or you rotate this guy to match it. Right? So what we can do is, we take a rotation. It's called rotationally invariant distance. The distance is defined by take the ins inside all rotational group, and you determine is L2 norm, F2 to the rotation. So obviously these two are very close, and they are very far away, very far away. So we can use this simply to determine the distance and the whatsoever. However, the affinity between two images might be wrong because of noise. In particular, in our case, the noise is very, very strong. So it is very possible that due to the strong noise, you are screwed. You get many outliers, and these outliers cannot really help you, so you cannot do too much. So our question is, now further reduced, how to distinguish the true neighbors from the false one? Remember, we have one more information. When we define RID, rotationally invariant distance, there is an arc mean term that we didn't use. We only use mean. So we take this into consideration. Suppose there is a rotation in between two images. Can we take this rotation into account so that we get a better result? So let's come back to cryo-EM example. We can define the rotational invariant distance, RID, IJ looks like this, P are the projections, and we can put weight. And we simply say, if the distance is very small, then we put 1. If the distance is large, then we put 0, and we want to do some transformation. For this epsilon? For distance. Oh, for epsilon, right? Yeah, so this is determined by yourself. This is a parameter you have to choose for the whole algorithm. Excuse me? Oh, subjectively. Oh, if you ask me, in practice, we choose 0.15. This is the value we choose. And why do we do it? There are several reasons. First, we don't have an automatic way to determine epsilon, so we have to do it by our hand. Second, there has been several papers discussing this issue. For example, you will see that this epsilon plays the role of diffusion process, and this diffusion process is not very sensitive to the final result. The final result is not very sensitive to the choice of epsilon. So this value is not perfect, but okay. So with this weight graph, we will introduce our algorithm. Right. Only when they are only when the distance are small. When the distance is small, we want to put this OIJ information to it and see if it can help us. And I want to show you some results, but obviously the computer didn't want to collaborate. So let's see. I thought maybe... No, it doesn't work. Yes, good, perfect. Okay, let's see. So this is the original, the yellow one is the original, the ground truth, the ribosome. The gray one is the result when we apply the vector diffusion map algorithm from the noisy, crazy noisy images, projection images you saw before. You can surely see that some places are not very good, but I don't blame on it because the original signal was too shitty, so fine. So roughly, you can see this. This movie was generated by Lan Hui Wang. Okay, maybe I can do it here, why not? Seems easy. Give up. Okay, so algorithm. Algorithm is a bit boring, so please tolerate it. Then we will go to something more interesting. We start from an affinity graph, G, V, E. And then we define a matrix, N by N. Suppose there are N points, N images. Now we define an N by N matrix, N by N block matrix. So that each the I, J's block, we put WIJ, OIJ. Remember what WIJ is? WIJ is the distance in between, or the weight in between two points, between two images. And OIJ is the rotation in between them. Suppose there is an H. Otherwise, you put just put zero. The DIJ, DII, we put a diagonal block matrix. And in II's block, we put degree times identity matrix. And then, where degree is nothing but just local, like the local weight. So you build up a matrix, which is called S. This is a N by N block matrix. And for the IJ, you put OIJ in front. You put WIJ and OIJ. And here, the OIJ are all in OD, D-dimensional orthogonal group. So that if you write down D inverse S acting on V, where V is an ND vector, and you take a look in the I's block, it can be expanded in this way. Excuse me? E? Yes, E depends on epsilon. A priori, you choose epsilon. And then you build up your graph. Okay? So now what we have. If you are familiar with diffusion map, you will see that it is nothing but diffusion map. Except you put OIJ inside. You take one more information into account. OIJ is argmin O inside O2 such that this is I minus O IJ, and this is Frobenius norm. Yes. Exactly. This is the assumption. So in this problem, we don't take the translation into account. We assume that the images have been centered. And in the end, if you want to take this consideration back, it can be done by considering more complicated bundle structure. But for the simplicity, we assume that all the images are well centered, which is somehow maybe a good assumption. Huh. The computer scientists, they have their way to use some mutual whatever, entropy, whatever. Yeah. They have some techniques on the lab to do it. So we consider, now you can see that this guy is not symmetric. So if we want to calculate its eigenvalues and eigenvectors, the simplest way is to consider its symmetric, its similar matrix, which is symmetric. So we just multiply D inverse minus, D2D minus 1 half bilaterally, so that if this guy becomes symmetric, and you find all the eigenvalues, and you order the eigenvalues. And because they are similar, so you can easily come back from the eigenvectors here back to the eigenvectors of the original D inverse S. And here is the essential observation of this work. After you build up this guy, and S delta 2t, if you raise by 2t, the ij's entry, which is the ij's block, is Hilbert-Schmidt norm. It's nothing but the trace of this guy. And if you expand everything, you get it. You get this expression. And you see this is ijj. So we consider the following possibility. We define vector diffusion map as Vt, which map I to this guy, to the Hilbert space, so that the Hilbert-Schmidt norm square is the inner product of Vt I and Vt j. So we get an inner product structure inside R to the nd. Then we can define vector diffusion distance between I and J. Let me remind you, the row of I and J are images. So now we get a new distance in between I and J. And the vector diffusion distance is nothing but after you map, you evaluate it at a two norm, which becomes this guy, just by simple expansion. Some simple properties. I can just do it by hand and you see it. That is, the S tilde plus minus I is positive definite. I plus minus S tilde. And so that what you can conclude is lambda I is in between minus 1 and 1. And if you do some simulation, you can see this. In practice, people might ask, okay, well, the whole purpose of working with this manifold setup or somehow low rank structure, this manifold structure is to do dimension reduction. But it seems that you try to boost your dimension from n, from something p squared, whatever, to something even more crazy, n to the d. But it is not true. Or it is true, but we can avoid it. How? Because after you after you order the eigenvalues, you will see that the eigenvalues decay kind of quickly. So what you can do is you can raise the moment, you can raise the, you can raise the diffusion time, which you understand why it is called diffusion time later. You can raise the diffusion time something higher so that most of the eigenvalues become small. And you can choose the, only the first few significant eigenvalues, eigenvectors, to do the mapping. That is, you choose m so that lambda to the 2tm is greater than some delta, which you choose by your hand. You can choose it to be 0.1 or 0.0, 0.1, whatever. And you will see later that this is nothing but Heisenberg principle, which plays the role in between topology and geometry. So let's come back to Kraal-EM problem. Suppose I use the previous definition and these two are reversed neighbors. Okay. And you take it, if you use the only RID, the rotational invariant distance, and you group the images, then it is quite bad because you may take something very, very far away from you to be as your neighbors because of the shortcut. But if you take RID, if you take OIJ, that is vector diffusion distance, into account, you will see that most of the images that are considered to be the neighbors are truly the neighbors. The result is much better. And this is the main reason why you can see something okay, or I would say good, from what you saw before. Now the SNR is 1 over 64. As far as I know, this is kind of hard to reach region. Okay, so now we have algorithm. We have problem, and we have algorithm. And the algorithm somehow works. And but the problem is now, why does it work? How can you do the analysis and tell me what's going on? And the answer is yes. We can provide some theoretical explanation of this algorithm and tell you what's going on. So we will understand the vector diffusion map from the viewpoint of differential geometry. So the assumption is, suppose you have a manifold, d-dimensional manifold, which is embedded in RP, which we only assume it is compact. And we here we assume it's smooth, but in general you can relax it to C2. Maybe C3 is safer. Then you get several sampling points, x1 to xn, sample from the manifold independently uniformly. And you build up an affinity graph from x. So now you get a graph. By what? You fix epsilon, and then for all the points xi, xj, suppose their distance is less than square root of epsilon, you put a link. Okay? So that you can define wij. Wij is when you can use the weight kernel weighted distance or whatever. So you get v, you get e, and you get wij. Now if you want to compare it with vector diffusion map, what's left? OIJ, the transformation. And what is it? To determine OIJ, we need two steps. The first one is local PCA. The second one is alignment. Local PCA is used to estimate the tangent plane, or somehow if people like to say dimension. Alignment is used to estimate parallel transport, which is the main ingredient in this work. So local PCA is simple, so it looks complicated, but it is nothing. The main reason is because if you imagine manifold, locally, what is manifold? Locally, it is Euclidean space. embedded in some high-dimensional space, because we already assume that this manifold has been embedded. So locally, it's just like a fine space. Then what you do is you run PCA to estimate this fine space, which related to the local point. That is what we call local PCA, because PCA will tell you, PCA is principal component analysis, which will tell you the most the dimension, the subspace which contains the most variation of the data set. So you can estimate the dimension, the tangent plane from local PCA. So then you don't need to read all this unless you want to implement it. So this is manifold, and locally you use local PCA to determine some basis. U, we call it UI, U1, U2, and the true is E1, E2, and you will see how the error is later. Then alignment, what is alignment? Now, at each point, you get a basis from local PCA, which is used to describe the tangent plane. Then what is OIJ? You put OI. What you do is at XI, XJ, there is a tangent plane, and you get this is U1 XI, this is U2 XI. So what you can have is OI is this one is U1, this one is U2, da da da. Suppose the dimension is D, you will get a UD. You will get a P by D matrix. So this is the representation of a basis of the tangent plane. Then what you do is you estimate OITOJ. OITOJ is a D by D matrix. And due to the curvature, you will see that OITOJ is not exactly an orthonormal group, orthonormal matrix. So what you have to do is you just find the arg mean of it. You fit OITOJ by an orthonormal matrix. And this, there is a very simple solution. We use Arun's algorithm by taking SVD. Yes? Tangent direction.
Just the tangent direction.
Yes.
In bed.
Yeah, locally. Locally, I embed local points to a d-dimensional space, but not really embed. We just use the local information of the local points to determine a subspace which fits this data, local data perfectly, which tells us the information of the tangent plane.
So, how do you know the PCA gives you the same dimension at every point?
Okay, this is a essential problem. But determining the dimension is another problem. And in this paper, we don't really work on this. So we count on other algorithm to determine the dimension of the manifold. And using local PCA, you can also determine the dimension by taking this into account. And you can quantify gamma, you can quantify D. Then for every point XI, you use the energy to determine how many directions, how many dimensions are significant. And then you take median of all this. Asymptotically, this will give us the perfect result. But numerically, it is not so ideal. You either have to have a priori information a priori knowledge of the data set, or you have to count on others' algorithm. So theoretically it is fine, but in practice I don't think it is good enough. Personal example, personal experience. Okay. So then we can run vector diffusion map by the same algorithm just as before. And you can define vector diffusion map and a truncated vector diffusion map. And even normalize vector diffusion map to take care of the non-uniform sampling issue. I will skip this. Then you can define normalized vector diffusion map and truncated one. Then here is the main theorem telling you what's going on. That's the assumption. MD is a manifold smoothly embedded and compact embedded in RP, and this compact can be relaxed to complete with some to put some conditions. The MT is the boundary part. X is your set is sampled according to some PDF, which is supported on manifold M, and we make an assumption that it is not zero and not infinity at any point. And we denote PYX, the parallel transport from X to Y along a geodesic, and epsilon is small enough. Local PCA, what is it? So if XI is not on the boundary, then local PCA will give you a basis which is close to the true basis, to a true basis up to this arrow. If you choose epsilon PCA, that is the radius of the local point, the local ball, to epsilon PCA. So the smaller you choose, the better the algorithm, the result is. But surely you have to depend epsilon PCA, you have to relate epsilon PCA with N, the sampling point, total sampling point. And even if it is on the boundary, we can get something. It is worse a bit. Yes?
What's the metric in for your space? Because
when we're talking about geodesic. The metric is the induced metric from ambient space. Once you embed your manifold to the Euclidean space, you can always reduce the canonical metric from Rn, Rp, to the manifold. Okay? So this is always the metric we use. Because in real life, if you go to the proof, you will see that in practice, we cannot know geodesic. There's no way we know it because we don't know the manifold a priori. So what we can do is we can only estimate the geodesic distance by the Euclidean distance, in between the Euclidean distance of the embedded point. That is the only thing you can do. So what excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that will be another issue. We will come back to it. Yes, but we will come back to this issue later. Because at this moment, the relationship in between this theorem and the cryo EM is not clear yet. If you in the image, we don't really view the image as a point. We will view the image as a point on the frame bundle. Okay, and the frame bundle, if we consider its representation, that is, we consider associated vector bundle of this principal bundle, then we come back to this framework. So there is a gap. And what we are talking here is, suppose we understand vector diffusion map simply from the manifold setup. What's going on? And then we link this back to the principal bundle setup, which is the cryo-EM principle, which is the cryo-EM setup. Okay?
So that's why, for this theorem, I'm just wondering if there is any H22 type issue. So you determine the dimension from the data.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, sure. Here we are.
You know
Yes, right. This is theory. What we are doing is, suppose we know everything, then what's going on? Yeah, and in practice, we have to say, okay, we have to fill in some parameters, we could estimate something. That is another issue. Okay? Again, I'm running out of time. So alignment, in any case, alignment Oij is nothing but the parallel transport. And if you take a careful look, what is Xi bar? Xi bar is the coordinate of the vector field with related to the basis. So use the representation theory here. It's a transport, parallel transport, like let me think if there is a simple way to explain it. So parallel transport x at y. This is x, and if you use pi, this is pi inverse y at y inverse, and you put it back, x. So pi inverse here, yes. So what is it? It is like on the manifold, you have a point here. This is on a tangent plane. What I'm worried about is my time. And then you put it back. You use your frame. You use your frame bundle. It's a manifold, and there's a frame bundle at each point. You use the frame bundle, and the calculate is coordinate. So you get the coordinate here. This is RP, RD. And then you put this coordinate back to another point. I would say this is maybe, and pi is om to m. Okay, so I think this is using coordinates, maybe the simplest way to explain. So you will see that there are several properties you can see locally. It is isometric. Anyway, it's always isometric by definition. So whatever, Oij is a parallel transport plus some arrow. Even on a boundary, we get it. Then we approximate the approximation of identity. Suppose you choose a C2 kernel and you sum alpha. Alpha is, we call it a normalization kernel, and you normalize the kernel by this guy. And you will see what it is. This guy depends on X and I. And if you consider this carefully, you will see that this guy is the estimation of the PDF. So what you do is you normalize the PDF, and then you get a new k alpha k epsilon alpha. Then what you can do is you will see that k epsilon alpha acting on Oij xj bar. It's nothing but integration kernel. Integration operator, integral operator by a kernel. Kernel is K epsilon alpha. So we get this. Then, this is our approximation of identity, which is like a kernel operator, integral operator, and you just expand it locally. Then you get connection operation out, and X here. And even on the boundary, because of the symmetry issue, you cannot get Laplacian back, but you can get somehow first order turn back. So in the end, the operator we consider in numerics. Asymptotically, will converge to connection operation plus some term which depends on PDF. And as you can see, if P is 1, that is P is constant, this guy is 0, this guy becomes 0, so you get connection Laplacian. But if P is not constant, you are screwed. Then what you do is you choose alpha to be 1. Then you cancel this term out. That is the effect of normalization. And on a boundary, you get something like this. And notice that this is a first order term. So to avoid blow up, in the end, we get the homogeneous Neumann boundary condition on the manifold. If we check this, if we consider this operator. And we can even prove that the T, this operator, this kernel, this integral operator, in the end, converge to hit kernel of connection Laplacian associated to the vector bundle, tangent bundle, sorry. And some properties of connection Laplacian. The time is running out, so I will skip them. And we can define by the same thing. Define a vector diffusion map and vector diffusion distance by playing the same game. Like we take the KT, the kernel, and we evaluate its Hilbert-Schmidt norm, da, and define the diffusion map, vector diffusion map, and we can define vector diffusion distance. Okay, in the end, finally, we know what vector diffusion distance is. Vector diffusion distance is nothing but geodesic distance. Almost. And the VT is a diffeomorphic embedding. And even further, we can prove that this distance can be used to generate or to introduce a metric on the set of manifolds with some topological and geometrical constraints so that this set of manifold is precompact, which helps us to understand somehow the noise. Numerical results very quickly. On S2, you see when time is hit, you get somehow the local geodesic distance. But remember, everything is local. You cannot get anything global. So, locally. And T2, locally, you get the geodesic distance. But when time is 1,000, everything is mixed up. So you cannot get anything. So this is what I meant here. You have to have this condition. V, T, are both are very small. That's the condition. And even for sphere, you can use representation theory to calculate the multiplicity of its Hodge Laplacian. And because the sphere has constant Ricci curvature, so the eigenvalue, multiplicity of eigenvectors, eigenvalues, a multiplicity of eigenvalues of Hodge Laplacian and connection Laplacians are the same. So we can use that result from Hodge Laplacian to get the result for connection Laplacian, and that is the result. Seems quite okay. Can get very beautiful result. Only from, I remember, even for S5, I ran 3,000 points. Whatever. And so, because time is running out, so maybe I will very quickly mention that you can use the same idea to determine if a manifold is orientable or not by taking the determinant of the transformation group into consideration so that if a manifold, for example, S2 is orientable, you get quite pretty separation. If the manifold is not orientable, you get something creepy. And then, with the same idea, you can find a double covering of a manifold, of a non-orientable manifold. And we can prove that for all manifold with Z2 free isometric action, we can always embed it into the some Euclidean space so that for orientable double covering, we can always get its embedding back. And this is, if we start from RP2, we can get S2. If we start from Klein bottle, we can get the torus back. If we start from more torus, we can get the cylinder back. And the other issue, final, and we can apply this to Fresco fragment, and that this is whatever, and then there's some references. So that's and one more issue is about like the relationship in between cryo EM and the vector diffusion and the vector diffusion map. For cryo EM problem, if you think about this, each projection image is related to a point of SO3. Because when your molecule is rotating on the 3D dimensional space, it is parametrized by SO3. So each image is related to SO3. And SO3 is the principal bundle of S2. Frame bundle, actually, of S2. So what you do is you take the SO3 information and you compare them on the fiber to generate the information on the tangent bundle so that you can construct the vector diffusion map. This is the final linkage. So you understand what's going on the tangent bundle, and you view each projection, each image, projection image, as a point in the frame bundle, and then you link it back to the vector diffusion map. Thanks. Yes. Go back to step one. Sorry, let me. I just close it. Let me open it. Step one. Yes. 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 All the statement here I give is with let me show you. All the result here, for example, this result is with high probability. And the next one, this is with high probability. This is hidden here. You have some error. And how high is it? It is exponentially high, about 1 minus exponential to minus maybe 100, whatever, some constant which can be chosen. Oh, it depends on epsilon, depends on n, depends on whatever. But if you play with the epsilon and the relationship in between epsilon and n, this can be arranged to be 100 over 10, 50, so that it is of high probability. Yeah, in finite case. But numerical, but when n goes to infinity, you get what you want. And essentially, this is what it says here. Yes. Yes. Diffusion distance and diffusion time. Okay, here is it. Diffusion time is T. And diffusion distance is there. So that's the relationship. Excuse me? Oh, here, asymptotically, if you want to talk about diffusion distance, we can say it okay. So diffusion distance and time is related in this way asymptotically. And if you don't do it asymptotically, the relationship is weak. Diffusion time only tells you how your matrix or how your particle travel on the manifold. For example, you can start from a vector field, and then you try to use this B inverse S, which is people may call transition matrix of the vector field, and you rotate. You just try to perturb them, and then time t only tells you how the transition matrix will perturb the original vector, but it cannot. It is asymptotically. You cannot to say too much. For example, when time goes to infinity. Yeah, what you can only say is suppose you have a parallel vector field. That is, suppose you get a parallel eigenvector field. Then this parallel eigenvector field will always exist, no matter how you perturb it, and all the other will disappear. So when time is very very long, what's going on is the high frequency eigenvector field will just disappear because they oscillate too much. So once you mix them up, they will just disappear. Then we are not local anymore. But if time is small, because we want to have geodesic distance, this is a local information, so we have to choose a small time. Otherwise, you will go to the topological issue. For example, if you don't have parallel transport, you can maybe infer that there is some obstruction in topology. Yes? Oh, that is the problem we have to think about. Yeah, we are working on this. That is not very very easy problem. Suppose if you have some symmetry inside, which kind of symmetry? For example, that may be C3, C4, Cp, just this simple symmetry. Then what's going on? I cannot answer this problem now. Sorry.
Yes. Like those two points turn out to be close, even though they're supposed to be far away. So at the end, how do you distinguish, how do you tell that this point is not where it's supposed to be? You know, actually this point should be someplace else.
This can be explained by using random matrix theory.
No, I mean in your approach, so how do you assign the correct location? Because, you know, ultimately that's what you're doing, right? You're finding the appropriate human direction. But if human direction was at the beginning determined wrong, is that those two images, those two views should get similar human direction, but that was a mistake due to no cause by noise. And actually those two images should get, human direction.
So you are asking the problem.
How do you solve this problem here?
Yeah, you want to.
That would be the main point.
Yeah, you want to understand what's going on. If I apply this algorithm to determine the projection direction of each image, the connection Laplacian has a good structure, a good property. That is, suppose first six eigenvector fields are the x, y, z direction projection to the tangent bundle, and you can use this information to determine an a priori parametrization of your images, but these images, the projection directions estimated in this way are not accurate because Radon transform will generate some nonlinear deformation of S2. So you can only get some rough relationship which allows you to improve the SNR. Then you have to use Kamenai algorithm to get the best final result. What I mean is, okay.